This is 90.1 KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. I'm News Director Randall White, here to introduce a two-hour special program as part of our continuing coverage of local politics and the upcoming June primary election. Today's broadcast is brought to you in partnership with Cuesta College and its associated students, Charter, and Cox Communications. We are now going to rebroadcast the debate that was held this past Thursday evening between the candidates running for California's 24th Congressional District. We also want to remind you that we have in-depth interviews with 8 of the 9 candidates that you can hear on our website anytime at kcbx.org. Now, here's Thursday's debate.
Good evening. My name is Brad Pomerantz. I am the host of Charter Local Edition, which airs throughout the state on Charter Communications and Cox Communications, as well as on the California Channel. It is my supreme honor and pleasure to welcome you to one of the many forums these 9 candidates surely are participating in. They are, of course, candidates for the United States Congressional seat number 24 in the state of California. The seat will be vacant as a result of the incumbent retiring Lois Capps. On behalf of Del Hines and Lisa Ludovici of Charter Communications, Kirsten McLaughlin of Cox Communications, Dr. Gil Stork of Cuesta College, as well as Professors Mark Weber and Dr. Anthony Gutierrez of Cuesta College, thank you so much for joining us. At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce you to the incoming ASCC President and Student Trustee, Michael Constable, who will be leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good evening. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Thank you, Michael. It's now my supreme honor to introduce you to one of my heroes. His name is Dr. Gil Stork. He's the president of Cuesta College. Mr. Stork, Dr. Stork.
Thank you very much, Brad, and thank you all for coming out tonight and joining us here at Cuesta College to listen to these 9 brave Americans who are stepping forward to be part of a changing world. Election 2016 is going to be monumental. We'll have a change of presidents. We'll have a change of representation in District 24. And we need people to step forward who have the courage that want to make a difference. It's no longer just representing your county or your city. It's now representing us, the residents of District 24 in the state capital. And when these men and women step forward, they're not only taking the challenge of representing us, but they're also taking the challenge and the tremendous responsibility of impacting the lives of every citizen of the United States of America. But what an opportunity, a lifetime opportunity to be part of that democratic process that we all get to participate in. So I want to congratulate each and every one of you. Sometimes people who want to step forward and take on leadership roles have their sanity questioned. But I know that from my experience, sometimes I question my sanity, but other times I say, what a privilege. What a privilege it is to represent other people. We make decisions at this campus on the basis of what's in the best interest of our students. And I hope as you go through this process, you're always thinking about what's in the best interest of the United States citizens, and especially District 24. Again, congratulations for stepping forward, and good luck tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stork. The candidates have been made aware of the ground rules, but I do want to set them forth briefly. I also want to mention that you see we have new robotic cameras. Please try to minimize your movement during the debate. I'm talking about the audience because it can adjust and affect the cameras. Also, with any luck, we'll be taking questions via Twitter. That is my Twitter handle, at Brad Pomerantz. We have some students roaming around to help you with Twitter. And in terms of questions, yes-no questions could be easy to answer, so you may want to think about yes-no questions. The open and closes are 90 seconds, as the candidates know. Each candidate will have a chance to answer a question in 60 seconds, and some candidates, given the respective question, will have a chance to rebut in 30 seconds. I'd like to briefly introduce all the candidates. We are sitting in alphabetical order. We start at the end with Kacho Ashagian. He is a Republican, small businessman, and assemblyman. Salute Carbajal. He is a Democrat. He is a Santa Barbara County supervisor. Justin Fareed. He is a small businessman and a rancher. He's a Republican. Steve Isaacson, no party preference, is an electronics engineer and a businessman. Matt Kokanen is a financial planner and a businessman, also a Republican. Benjamin Lucas, a Democrat design consultant. Bill Ostrander, a Democrat farmer and nonprofit director. Helene Schneider, a Democrat, mayor of Santa Barbara. John Ubersacks, no party preference, is a social scientist and biostatistician. Congratulate candidates. You are looking at the next representative for California, District Number 24, but let's begin the debate with opening statements. We're going to start at the end with Kacho Ashagian.
Thank you, Dr. Sor. Thank you, Cuesta College. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. My name is Kacho Ashagian. I represent you as your 35th District Assemblyperson. To give you some of my background, I arrived at Cuesta College some 45 years ago, and I've still been here since then. I graduated, go Cougars, and then I came to Cuesta just to improve on my English and went to Cal Poly, got a degree in business administration. And if I sound a little tired, I am because I just drove here from Sacramento. And I proudly earned my Alumni of the Year award from Cuesta College in 2007. I work in a gas station to help me to college with the expenses. The love of the community helped me stay local and buy the station. And then the spirit of free enterprise got me where I am today in the business world. Being in business for myself, it helped me to get involved with my community, being involved with Rotary Club, Cuesta College, Special Olympics, and things of that nature, helped me put my finger on the pulse of the community and helped me where I am today. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your time and look forward to answering your questions. My time is up, and once again, go Cougars.
Thank you, Mr. Ashagian. If we can avoid applause just because of time, if we can avoid applause. Salute Carbajal.
Thank you very much, Brad. Thank you, President Stork. I'm the youngest of seven. I immigrated with my family from Mexico when I was 5 years old, first to Arizona, then moved to Oxnard here on the Central Coast. And my father was a farm worker. And despite long hours and long days of work, it was challenging to make ends meet for our family. We moved into public housing, and despite the economic hardship my family faced, I had extraordinary teachers and two very attentive parents. I attended UCSB, the first in my family to go to a four-year university. I also joined the United States Marine Corps, served my country, met my wife on a blind date when I was at UCSB. I have two wonderful children. And for the past 12 years, I've served as a Santa Barbara County supervisor. I know what it's like to struggle. And as part of my service on the Board of Supervisors, I've been able to work in a bipartisan fashion, collaboratively with my colleagues, to bring about solutions to address the many challenges our community faces. We have the highest rainy day reserve in the county's history, the highest credit bond rating in the state of California, and we balance our budget each and every year. I want to take that same bipartisan approach to Washington to make sure working middle-class families have the same opportunities I had growing up.
Thank you. Justin Fareed.
Thank you, President Stork, for your message and for Cuesta for hosting this evening's debate. I was born and raised here on the Central Coast, down in Santa Barbara. On my mother's side, my family's been ranching here in California for three generations. My father is a U.S. Army veteran and a doctor who used his medical expertise to develop devices and invent devices that help people with repetitive stress injuries. I grew up packing boxes, taking inventory, going to different trade shows in the chambers around the area, building this business. Today I'm vice president of that business. I accomplished my childhood dream of playing football at UCLA. I walked on there, had the opportunity to work on the coaching staff there before I had an opportunity to go work for a senior member of Congress a few years ago. It was my job to work on a handful of different issues, evaluate the policy, work to develop policy, bring a collaborative and concerted approach, and work to move that policy. But it was there that I saw just how dysfunctional Congress is today. You hear a lot of empty rhetoric without any kind of action. You see a tendency and a culture and a mindset for political insiders to say and do whatever it takes to get reelected, and their focus is more on their next election than it is the policies that affect the rest of us in the next generation. I'm running for Congress to bring a voice from the Central Coast back to Washington, D.C., to get Congress working again and to bring a voice for the next generation. I look forward to continuing this discussion through the course of tonight's debate and answering any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Isaacson.
Good evening. Thank you for all coming, and thank you to the hosts. I'm an independent. I'm a native Californian. I've lived in this district for over 40 years. I got my PhD from UCSB. Congress is faced with many problems in the years to come, but I want to focus on just one of them first, just a second. The budget. We all know that the budget's been running out of control. We have a very large deficit every year. It's going to get worse. They can no longer borrow from the Social Security Trust Fund. There is no surplus anymore. Matter of fact, they have to start paying the money back. The budget's on course to become $25 trillion in 6 years from now. The interest on the debt will be equal to half the discretionary budget. That's greater than the defense budget currently. The dysfunctional Congress is not changing this course whatsoever, and it's destined to happen. I work for a local electronics company, manufacturing company, because I can recognize and solve problems. I'm going to bring that problem-solving ability to Congress next year, and that is why I'm running. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Kokanen.
Good evening. Thank you for coming here, Dr. Stork. Thank you. I was born in Finland on a cold winter night. It was a shock to my system. I remember it well. When I was 13 years of age, my father died, and I told my mother I want to go to America. She humored me and permitted me to go to the embassy, U.S. Embassy in Helsinki, to get the immigration papers, which I got. I turned them in, and 3 years later, I got my visa. When I got my visa, I left Finland, left my family there, left everybody, and came to New York by myself, didn't know anybody there. I had one suitcase, and I'm here to tell you tonight, American Dream is alive. Now I have two suitcases. I went to Westmont College, met my wife there, studied philosophy. I was the flying Finn on the soccer team. Studied philosophy, went back to Europe, did my graduate studies. I met my wife at Westmont also, my wife Jean. We've been married 48 years, so I have two children, two grandchildren. I've been a financial planner the whole time, and that's been my career. I have two master's degrees in financial management and financial sciences. And I've been on a lot of boards locally. I've served in many functions. I've been trustee at Grace Church in San Luis Obispo. I've been in San Luis Obispo for 45 years. I served in the Army National Guard, got an honorable discharge. And I support the right to keep and bear arms, private property rights, and energy independence.
Thank you, sir. Benjamin Lucas.
I am Benjamin Lucas. Tonight I'd like to start by pointing out what all the candidates have in common tonight. That is, none of us sitting at this table this evening has been to a federal level office. This gives us, the people, we the people, a unique opportunity to really elect a new attitude in Washington. We've had an incumbent in for 20 years, two decades of the same political philosophy. What I want to do is, I realized after several of these debates, what you're going to see is most likely some sound bites, some statistics in 1 minute, and other things like that. You might even hear what the supported Democrat and Republican parties have to say, probably not what the candidate has to say. So tonight, I'd like to tell you that I have a comprehensive package I passed out called The Solution, which answers six major questions in our government facing our district and our entire country. They are energy, infrastructure, immigration, gun control, education, and employment. So if you're in the audience tonight, make sure you've picked up a copy. If you're listening on NPR, KCBX, or your local Cox station, go to thelucassolution.com, follow along with the debate, and you'll be able to take notes and follow a detailed outline. I thank you for your time tonight. I thank Cuesta College, Charter Cox, and Mr. Stork for inviting us all here this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bill Ostrander.
Good evening to all of you. You know, I've heard Mr. Carbajal tell that story about his family quite a number of times, but honestly, it always strikes me that that's actually his father's story. And honestly, most of us here over the age of 40 have actually got the same story. But one of the reasons that I think we're here tonight is to discuss the fact that our parents were able to lift us up, but many of us are not able to do that for our kids. That America has a certain level of decline going on, and we're all standing by watching it. You know, take this into consideration. We have the highest infant mortality rate of any of the developed nations. We have the highest rate of preventable deaths of all the rich nations in the world, despite paying the most for health care. We now rank 20th in high school graduations and 19th in college graduations in the world. We have the most income inequality of any country in the world. And we rank 20th in the world in terms of our upward social mobility, despite the fact that we have probably some of the greatest resources the world has ever seen. I think it's appropriate that we're here at Cuesta College because today's young are the clearest indication or the clearest vision of what our future is. And I'm concerned. America is still rich. America has rich in natural and human resources. But it's important that you understand these outcomes are a result of our choices in our legislation. We need a new ethos in our government and the representatives that we choose. Thank you.
Thank you. Helene Schneider.
Good evening, and I want to thank Cuesta College, Cox Communications, and Charter Communications for putting this on this evening. I'm Helene Schneider. I'm the mayor of the city of Santa Barbara. I'm in my second term, and I've served at City Hall now. This is my 13th year. Before that, I was the Human Resources Director for Planned Parenthood, where I worked for the local affiliate for 11 years that covered from San Luis Obispo down to Thousand Oaks. So I know about issues related to the Central Coast my entire adult life here on the Central Coast. And I want to go to D.C. because, as was mentioned, and I too believe that Washington is dysfunctional and it's broken, and we got to break through the gridlock. And I believe my combination of experience both as a local government mayor, working with other mayors around the country on how to get things done, and getting unanimous votes from my city council on major policy issues, coupled with working in a nonprofit institution on an issue such as the one that promotes women's rights and full equality and access to reproductive health care, these are prime important issues that I know we care about here on the Central Coast and needs a strong vote and a strong voice for you for the 24th Congressional District. I want to be that strong voice. I want to take what's working here in California and move that onto a national level and move that envelope forward, move that message forward, and be a strong voice as well. I hope to earn your support this evening, and I look forward to your questions tonight, and I hope I can earn the vote of the voters in the 24th Congressional District as your next representative. Thank you.
Thank you. John Ubersax.
Dr. Stork kindly reminded us all of our responsibility to look after the interests of the people in the district and of the entire country. Now, our country today is in the midst of a grave crisis. It's an economic crisis, but it's also a moral crisis and a cultural crisis. And this crisis is particularly hard on the young people. Now, if you investigate it, you'll find that at the core of this crisis is that the United States today has become a global military empire. We've been at war for 15 years. That's a new record for our country. We're in war in seven countries right now. We've squandered $6 trillion in Afghanistan and Iraq with nothing to show for it except to make more enemies. And these wars, on top of it, are immoral. Any talk about humanitarian concerns are pretexts. These wars are being fought for oil and for profit and on behalf of international banks. This is the ugly truth. At the same time, the Republican and the Democrat parties are dividing and distracting the population at the national level. Now, I'm saying that we have a way out of this, and that's to elect independent representatives who are committed to the path of peace. That's the opportunity I'm giving you. The journey of peace is not going to end in this election, but until we begin, we can't start, and until we start, we can't finish it. Please vote for peace.
You are listening to 90.1 KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
We begin with questions that have been prepared by students and faculty at Cuesta College, not by myself. The first question, we'll start with candidate number two, which would be Salud Carbajal, and then move downward. Last May, the Refugio oil spill threatened marine life, our beautiful beaches, and public health. What is your stance on drilling for oil off our coast? And how do you plan to leave a positive mark on our planet if elected to Congress? Mr. Carbajal.
Thank you very much. I have had a longstanding record of being against offshore oil development, exactly for the example you've raised. The perils do not outweigh the benefit. What we need to be doing in this country is investing in divesting ourselves from fossil fuels and investing in renewable energy. The Refugio oil spill reminded us of the peril that has not only to our environment, but our economy. And what we need to do in Congress is to make sure that we have better oversight than we had in this particular case through PHMSA in the Department of Transportation that provides for oversight of conditions and making sure that pipelines are capitalized in a way where they are being taken care of and they're being replaced when they reach the end of their life. And clearly in this case, the federal government did not have the oversight that we needed to have to make sure that this company, Plains, did not leave its equipment the way it did.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Mr. Fareed.
First and foremost, I've traveled the Central Coast meeting with voters all over the place and had the pleasure and honor of meeting with a small business that just started out creating LED lights, creating more energy efficiency that lasts longer and keeping costs lower. We need to move towards a future of better innovation for our environment and technology. I believe that we're moving in that direction very much so. With regard to the unfortunate reality of the oil spill, my opponent here mentioned the better oversight from Congress and the Department of Transportation, which was the regulating body in Washington, D.C. on the Plains All-American Pipeline. They passed in 2011 the Pipeline Safety Act, which had 42 mandates from Congress to improve the oversight on this, and there was a number of them that were never implemented by the administration, by the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. So to me, this is a clear example of which oversight body is best on these types of issues. Is it a Washington, D.C. bureaucracy, or is it better done locally?
Briefly, Mr. Fareed, the question is, what is your stance on drilling for oil off our coast? Do you support or oppose?
I believe that here in the United States, we have the best proprietary technology to foster fuels, but as we can move forward in a positive direction, that we should move towards a decarbonized future here in the United States.
So do you support or oppose offshore oil drilling?
I think we have the best technology here.
Okay, let's move on to Mr. Isaacson. No comments from the audience, please. Mr. Isaacson.
In direct answer to your question, I'm not generally for offshore oil drilling. There is some resources out there, but it's relatively limited compared to the risks that have been repeatedly shown down in the Santa Barbara area and the oil that's come up on the beaches. I would much prefer to develop some of the green resources we have in the two counties to give a more carbon-free environment for us in the future, because I do believe in global warming. The Refugio Beach pipeline breakage is an example of much of the deferred maintenance we'd have in many of our projects throughout the country. That was a particularly tragic one in that there was no real reason that somebody shouldn't have been doing maintenance on it, but obviously they didn't. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kokkonen.
In 1969, we experienced the breakage or the problem in Santa Barbara. That started the GOO movement, get oil out. I was a student at Westmont College and had been there, and every day when we'd go to the beach, we'd have to wash our feet because of the oil and tar that we got on the beach. Well, the channel is the second most active area of natural oil seepage in the world, and there's more oil, natural oil seepage from that area than more every year than the get oil out movement showed back in 1969. Studies have shown that, for example, around Holly, Platform Holly, by drilling the oil out, it has reduced the environmental damage by 50%. I'm all in favor of drilling for oil because of the environmental savings that we do, because if you have something that has pressure, if you drill it, the first thing you have to do is drill it out and relieve the pressure. And that, from an environmental standpoint, that's exactly the best thing that can be done for that.
Thank you. Mr. Lucas.
I support offshore oil drilling, and I feel that the accident at Refugio was a direct caused by Lois Capp's office, actually. There's not enough monitoring of codes and security and infrastructure of these processes. For 30 years, we haven't upgraded the infrastructure of these oil pipelines. Regulations hold us back. We have more oil, like Mr. Kokkonen said, coming off the shore, seeping. Toro Canyon, where I live in Montecito, seeps out of the hill all day long, runs down the mountain. We have it everywhere in Southern California. We need to export this oil. We need to get it out of the ground. It will seep. There's new, more safe technologies. All oil isn't used for fossil fuels. It's used for all kinds of production of many products, and Southern California, it's one of our incomes.
Thank you. Mr. Ostrander.
Absolutely not. This is a simple issue. It really is. Oil is a 20th century technology. It is a 20th century power. It is not a 21st century power. You know, if you think about it, the Earth actually produces 22,000 times more power than all forms of energy on the Earth combined. It is a very simple thing to realize that oil is not simply about stuff that seeps out of the ground and gets on your feet at the beach. We have a global warming crisis. Why would we not try to move away from that technology in any and every form we possibly can? At the same time, we are subsidizing oil companies to about $5 billion a year in tax subsidies while externalizing the costs. What sense does it make to continue to invest in that? It's fairly simple. We need to put more money into solar powers and alternative energies. Solar panels are now 80% cheaper than they were just 5 years ago. We need to move into 21st century, and continuing to subsidize fossil fuels is a poor choice.
Thank you. Helene Schneider.
I do not believe the federal leases on offshore oil should be renewed, and we should get ourselves away from offshore oil drilling, especially on the California coast, as well as in the Gulf of Mexico. And that is something that's the challenge. The challenge is, how do we plan for and pay for the transition from a fossil fuel economy and energy into a clean and renewable one? And you have to do it in a way that respects the industry itself and the workers in it, so you can put money into research and development and jobs into clean and renewable energy sources. Refugio was an onshore oil spill that went into the ocean. And the issues related to federal oversight for shutoff valves and inspections obviously were woefully inadequate when the spill happened. And that very important component of oversight and inspections needs to be obviously very much more strict and strictly upheld. But the true thing is, as we look at Earth Day, which is tomorrow is the anniversary of Earth Day, is where's the political will in terms of your funding and your advocacy and getting things done to move towards a clean and renewable energy source? And that is something I've done as mayor and want to bring to you and to Congress.
Thank you. Mr. Ubersacks.
Let me give you a perspective on this that no one else is mentioning. Right now, Saudi Arabia is blackmailing the United States. You may have seen on 60 Minutes, there's increasing evidence that Saudi Arabia, elements of their government, was responsible for 9-1-1. all of the wars going on in the Middle East, Saudi has a big part in. And we are owned by them because we need their oil, and we need their oil to back our dollar. Look up the word Google petrodollar. So I say, I'm an environmentalist, I would jump for joy the day we shut down those oil wells. But for now, there is grave risks with being dependent on a foreign government. So I think we need to gradually phase out our own oil production. We're starting to make headway now. Obama's in Saudi Arabia right now because we're starting to push back because we're lowering the cost of oil by putting our oil out on the world market. And that's giving us some breathing space. We're not being blackmailed by the oil-producing nations. It's a big problem eventually, but not now. We can keep drilling for now safely.
Mr. Shachian.
Thank you. I do support offshore oil drilling, especially in the areas that we have leases from the federal government. I think with today's technology, it can be better, safer, secure. The accident that happened in the Santa Barbara County, it's not acceptable. We need to bring those people into justice and have them criminally court-martialed. I think that will put an end to their responsibilities. Those who take less care, show less responsibility, will pay attention. Again, the product lines can be double wall. We can have shut-off valves to minimize the accidents. But having said that, I also support renewable energy. It was my efforts that brought over $630,000 to San Luis Obispo County to help them with plan for renewable energy sources. Thank you.
Interesting question from the Twitterverse. A quick answer from all candidates. What vehicle did each candidate arrive in tonight? We'll start with Mr. Carbajal just for this follow-up.
An American car, Ford Fusion.
Mr. Fareed.
A Jeep Grand Cherokee.
How about Mr. Isaacson?
A BMW.
How about Mr. Kokanen?
A Chevy truck diesel.
Mr. Lucas.
Ford Explorer.
Mr. Ostrander.
I carpooled, thank you very much.
Mr. Schneider.
American-made Toyota Corolla.
Mr. Ubersacks.
A 2001 Buick LeSabre.
Okay, and Mr. Shachian.
From 64 Chevy truck to 2009 Chevy Suburban.
Okay, that was fun. Next
everything
question.
In between.
This is also from Cuesta faculty in this instance. John Kennedy taught Americans that government could improve their lives. Ronald Reagan taught Americans that government is the problem. Where do you stand? We begin with Mr. Fareed.
The number one thing we need to expect from our representatives is that they're doing their job. That's representing the interests of the people here on the Central Coast and the benefit of the American people. I think what has happened today at the federal level is it's gone way too bloated, way too costly, and it's gotten less effective in serving the needs of everyday people. I believe we need to bring 21st century policies to modernize and make a leaner, more efficient, more effective institution that could serve us in the long term. The fact that it's incurring the type of debt that it is and the prospects that that looks like for our future, for many of the faces that we're seeing in this room and just like myself, that's going to lead to a future of more debt, higher taxes, fewer jobs, and a lower standard of living for the future of this country. So I believe that we need to have a balance, but where we are today in Washington, D.C., it's become far too bloated, and it's necessary that we reform it systemically and strengthen the will of Congress.
Mr. Isaacson.
Certainly, Congress today pays way too much attention to special interests. Later today, it has a lot to do with getting elected, finances, how much it's donated, what obligations the candidates pick up and serve at Congress. Congress in particular, but all of government, needs to pay attention to the people and what they need, what their needs are, and not what some corporation needs that day. Yes, aiding the corporations to give us jobs and such are some need, but primarily the job of Congress is to serve the people. It is our votes that elect them. That's what's important.
Mr. Isaacson, that was you?
That was me.
Mr. Kokanen.
Well, President Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what can you do for your country. Wise comments. I don't disagree with that, and I'm a Republican. Now, what President Kennedy also did, he reduced the income tax rate, and he went against his advisors because he said if we lower the tax rates, we will, as a government, actually increase the tax revenue to the government, and that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what Ronald Reagan did also. He decreased taxes, and that stimulated the economy, and we've done extremely well by that. The basic job of government is to keep its people safe, and it's not supposed to be controlling people. And, for example, the Obamacare, it wants to control our bodies, and if they control our bodies and health, they control us, and I'm absolutely against that. My comment is for the government, leave people alone. They will, the ingenuity of American people has taken us very well forward, and he'll continue to do that. I believe in American people.
Let's hold our applause, but thank you, Mr. Lucas.
John Kennedy and Ronald Reagan both had one thing in common. They both lived through social change. One was for social and one was for economic change. Both served their people, both served their community for the times they had to do so. John Kennedy was in a social era of change. Reagan was in a financial era of change. Both served their people just as well, and I think both are just as important as presidential icons in our past, and we should both study them for those reasons. I think they were both effective presidents, and one thing they conquered was they both were able to catch the will of the people at the time they were presidents. The 60s, the will was social change. Reagan was going through the hardest times socially with Russia and everything else, but he had economic downturn in his economy.
Thank you, Mr. Ostrander.
One of the worst things that Ronald Reagan ever did to all of us was when he uttered his famous line, the 9 most fearful or scary words in the English language is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. He took our, which is our government, and turned it into the indefinite article of the. He made us turn against one another. He made us turn against government. And government is actually us. The fact of it is when these people are talking about how they want to be independent and they're so self-serving, how many of you have iPhones out there? Do you know that your lithium battery and the internet connectivity and your touchscreen and the GSP that you all have all comes from publicly funded research? What we have is a mixed economy, and that mixed economy has shown us the greatest development of human quality of life ever in the last 100 years, and it was because it was a confluence of our government with our private enterprise. I agree with Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you. Ms. Schneider.
President Kennedy not only say, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. It's a two-way street. He also had the moonshot and talked about that we were going to get to the moon within the before the decade was out. He didn't get to live to see that, but his vision and the motivation and the funding and the priorities and the political will made that happen and made the United States a stronger place to live and a more economically viable place to live. And I think the other thing President Kennedy did was realize that in looking at the rights of civil rights of all Americans and looking to the speakings and teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King when he said that no one is free until everyone is free. And that you have to make sure that you have civil rights and civil laws throughout the country before anyone can really move to their full potential. That's the thing that a governor, that's the thing that a president and members of the House of Representatives can bring that tone, that office, and that perspective on a national level so that we are all reaching our full potential.
Thank you. Mr. Ubersacks.
I believe it was George Washington who said that government is an organ of power with which one segment of society imposes its will on another segment. So my position is that if something has to be done by the government, we've failed. What we have to do instead is realize that we are a nation. Our government is not our nation. We're the nation. And we need to work out our problems together with fraternal love and with concern for one another, bearing one another's burdens. And if we have that attitude, we don't need the government to solve our problems. If we don't have that attitude, the government can only make mischief. So government is not the – I agree with Reagan on this one, in short.
Fair enough. Mr. Ashajian.
Thank you. I think there's a lot of truth with both presidents, what they have said. our decisions does have an impact on our society. For example, who we do trades with, how we can improve the economy, how do we create jobs. I see a lot of youngsters among us upon graduation. We want to be sure that you have jobs available for you. Otherwise, we're not doing our job. We need to make America more competitive. We need to make our country more competitive. We need to make our state more competitive. My 38 years of being in business has helped me wear that hat through the decision-making process that I've been experiencing here in the county level for 3 terms and also on the state level for 3 terms.
Mr. Carbajal.
Thank you. Certainly, I agree with President Kennedy. Government has a fundamental role in every society. And certainly, we live in a democracy, one with free enterprise. And government needs to provide for an environment that's balanced, one where free enterprise can prosper, but one where we don't forget to ensure the rule of law and to ensure that we have programs that lift everyone up. Government is our education system. Government is our military. Government makes sure that we provide for programs for those who need assistance, Social Security, Medicare. Make sure that there's worker protections. Make sure that there's a balance in our lives, that our air is protected, our water is protected. Making sure that all interests provide for a balance so that we have the type of prosperity for individual liberties and rights and security in our country, throughout our entire country.
Follow-up question from the Twitterverse, yes, no answer. Should, and deals with government power and authority, should Americans be allowed to purchase semi-automatic weapons? Yes or no answer. We're going to start with Mr. Isaacson.
No.
Mr. Kokanen.
Yes.
Mr. Lucas.
Yes.
Mr. Ostrander.
There's no point in it.
Yes or no?
No.
Ms. Schneider.
No.
Mr. Ubersachs.
Yes.
Mr. Ashajian.
Yes, but not everyone.
Mr. Carbajal. Pardon me?
No.
No?
No, wait. The question again was, should people be able to buy?
Should Americans be allowed to purchase semi-automatic weapons?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Fareed.
Under the rule of law, yes.
Can I ask for clarification on that, actually? Are you asking for semi-automatic weapons or assault weapons?
The question was semi-automatic weapons.
Okay. I misunderstood your question.
So would you like to amend your answer?
Yes.
Do you should Americans be allowed to purchase semi-automatic weapons?
Yes, because a semi-automatic weapon is different than an assault weapon, and I wouldn't agree to an assault weapon.
Thank you.
It is.
Anyone else want to amend? I'll be glad to allow that. Mr. Carbajal?
I will say no, and a semi-automatic weapon is an assault rifle. Having served in the United States Marine Corps, I can tell you that much.
Okay, this is fun. Keep those questions coming in from the Twitterverse. Clearly, yes-no questions are easy to throw out after planned questions. So if you want to see a lot of questions coming in, make them yes-no, and we'll get them asked and answered.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio, 89.5 FM in Santa Barbara.
Another question from our friends at Cuesta. Which interest groups have you worked with, and why did you choose to work with them? And I think we'll start with Mr. Isaacson. Did you answer the last question first?
No, Mr. Fareed.
Okay, we'll start with Mr. Isaacson. Are you perplexed by the question?
Only what you mean by interest groups.
That's a fair question. That's how the question was drafted. I'll take some liberties and define it as groups with a particular position, groups that are advocating toward a specific issue or interest.
The groups I would have generally sided with wouldn't have what you'd consider political interests. I served with the local library to help docent computer usage amongst the population many years ago when a lot fewer people were familiar with computers. Obviously, having gotten 3 degrees, I've been on college campuses and worked with various groups on that, not on political issues, just local issues around the college campus. I was once a member of Mensa, but that was more social interaction. But I would not say that I have been the only active political thing that I've probably done is I was for the local Walmart out in Atascadero that will be coming in soon. And I helped work with the committee that was putting it through and making sure it successfully got passed by the Planning Commission. That's most political.
Thank you. So we're looking at advocacy organizations, is I think a fair way to say it, advocacy organizations. Mr. Kokanen?
I've been very active in church work. I attended the Grace Church in San Luis Obispo before I was their trustee and deacon for over 30 years. I am very interested in the veterans situations, and I established a nonprofit corporation after 9/11. It's called 9/11 American Thunder, and I put on lots of events to benefit the veterans. I've been involved with that. I've been involved in professional societies. I've been president of the Charter Life Underwriters 2 terms. I've been president of Insurance and Financial Advisors locally here. So those are the professional organizations and other organizations with which I've been involved in. I believe in the Constitution of the United States, and things that interest me are any organization that wants to promote the Constitution and the rule of law in our nation. Those are the ones that I like, and I want to support them.
Thank you. Mr. Lucas.
I think I'm only the only one sitting up here that's been a former member of the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and I really feel that working with the unions in California, you can get a lot accomplished. Going into the electrical system, energy is on the top of my platform for the solution. I think it's our most critical infrastructure problem we have in Southern California. That includes water, electricity, gas, all the utilities. Forget the pricing of housing in this state. Wait 10 years and see what your electric bill is, your gas bill, your water bill. You won't even be able to afford to live in the house that you have a mortgage on. It's working with the unions and creating an alternative energy flow that works for Southern California. And by doing that, you need to work with the unions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ostrander.
And again, I want to be sure that we're talking about organizations that we've worked with, like nonprofit kind of things, right?
Advocacy groups.
Advocacy. Okay, very good. So I actually have a list of people and organizations, advocacy groups that I've worked with. I've been a Big Brother for 35 years. I've been a member of the Sierra Club. I was a spokesperson for Coalition to Stop Food Irradiation. I spent a year in Africa, the African Conservation Trust, working on community development and trying to help preserve the last free-ranging population of black rhinos and cheetahs in the world. I helped to found the Citizens Congress, which goes to Washington and state and local work as well. Some of you may know about our public elections, publicly funded elections work that we've been doing. I've been part of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Program, trying to save heritage breeds of livestock from the bottlenecking that's going on in commercial agriculture. I've been part of the Aggie Backers. I've been part of the original group of People for the American Way. I have done a long list of things outside of government. And one of the things that I believe that our students should participate in exchange for college, would be a national civil service program for our youth so that they give back to the country they're inheriting.
Thank you. Ms. Schneider?
I've been involved in advocacy work since I was a teenager, actually one helping put funds in for Central Park, where I grew up. In college, I was part of SOAR, the Students Organized Against Racism, a network of the women's rights group. Been involved with Planned Parenthood not only as an employee, but also was on the Planned Parenthood Action Fund board and on the president of the Santa Barbara Women's Political Committee. Been involved with the League of California Cities. I currently sit on that statewide board. Been involved with the Society for Human Resources Management and the Santa Barbara Human Resources Association as its president a few years. The Coalition Against Gun Violence, have been on their advisory board as well as COAST for Sustainable Transportation. And through the U.S. Conference of Mayors, there have been other advocacy pieces, including Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Mayors for Peace, Mayors for Marriage Equality, and the Mayor's Challenge to End End Veteran Homelessness.
Thank you. Mr. Ubersacks?
I have a passion for higher education. It's just something instinctive to me. And it's a personal quest I have to see that young people have the same educational opportunities that I have. And when I began speaking to young people in our community and finding out the mountain of debt that they had to acquire to go to a university, I became extremely concerned. And I began gathering statistics to document the alarming increase of college tuition. And if you go to the Wikipedia now, look up college tuition, you'll see a graph I put there. You see, the California university systems, not the community colleges, the UCs, the Cal States, were not compiling that obvious information to see this exponential rise in college tuition. The reason it bothers me is because young people don't have the historical perspective to know that they're being taken advantage of this by this system, and they're going deeply in debt. So I've organized my own advocacy group called Californians for Higher Education Reform. I urge students to get politically active and demand justice.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Shajian.
Thank you. I'm one of the founding members of Capital Executive Partners. What we do, we mentor the students. I'm also involved with many local law enforcement agencies, such as the Sheriff's Advisory Foundation, also Slow Leaf. Being a member of my Rotary Club for 32 years, we do a lot of goodwill in our community. Been involved with Special Olympics for 27 years, and most of you know what we do there. The list goes on, but none of that I do for publicity reasons. I'd rather just do that on a private life and not discuss it publicly. But thank you for the question.
No, thank you. Mr. Carbajal.
Thank you very much. I have been involved with the Head Start Association promoting child development programs. Regarding the environment, the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters, I have been involved with Planned Parenthood of Santa Barbara, Ventura, and San Luis Obispo. I have been involved in with the Rape Crisis Center in Santa Barbara, the Education Foundation, a number of veterans groups, as well as Women Against Gun Violence, been involved with their advocacy group efforts as well. I've also been involved with a number of higher education groups, and more importantly, I just appreciate working on a daily basis with many of the various community nonprofits in my community to make sure that all their issues that are important to them are issues that we are working collectively to move their missions forward.
Mr. Fareed.
I'm a Rotarian. I serve on the Santa Barbara High School Foundation Board, my alma mater. I serve on a nonprofit board that works with first responders and veterans who have come back and deal with post-traumatic stress disorders. I've worked with the Police Activities League and the Special Olympics. These are some organizations I've worked with. My number one interest and the interest group that I'm working to represent is all of you in this room. I've spent a great deal of time meeting with voters all over the Central Coast, whether it's a fisherman up in Morro Bay, whether it's a firefighter in San Ynez, whether it's a teacher in Lompoc, farmers or ranchers in Santa Maria or San Luis. I've spent a great deal of time listening to people's concerns, and it's necessary that we have representatives in Congress that place the people that have sent them there to serve them before any other interest. We have Congress that's become an atrophied branch of government that isn't doing its job or owning up to the responsibility that they were sent there to do. And I want to talk about some of those reforms later on this evening.
We have more questions from the Twitterverse. We're going to ask two questions, and then we'll take our break. These are yes-no questions. I think it allows the candidates to give quick responses and allows you to get more questions answered. This question, I know you all are running for Congress, but it's a question that's been asked. Do you support the new California state law raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour? We're going to start with Mr. Kokanen, yes or no?
No, because there are unintended consequences with that, such as...
We're going to do yes or no answers. So we
the answer is no.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lucas.
Yes.
Mr. Ostrander.
Yes.
Ms. Schneider.
Yes.
Mr. Ubersacks.
Yes.
Mr. Ashajian.
No.
Mr. Carbajal.
Yes.
Mr. Fareed.
No.
Mr. Isaacson.
Yes.
One more question, which is a yes or no from the audience again. Do you support keeping abortion legal? There are no qualifications. That's the question. I read it directly. We're going to start with Mr. Lucas.
Yes.
Mr. Ostrander.
Yes.
Ms. Schneider.
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Ubersack.
That's not a yes or no question. I'm not going to answer it.
Mr. Ashajian.
I agree with that. This needs to be explained.
I will in a second. Mr. Carbajal.
Yes.
Mr. Fareed.
I second that. Or third that.
Mr. Isaacson.
Yes.
Mr. Kokanen.
No.
Did I ask Mr. Lucas?
Yes, you did.
Okay, so I'll expand on it. Do you? Oh, it's my daughter calling. I'll take a question.
What her question is?
She might have a question for us. See which question she has for us.
I'm not going to answer.
Brad, you're supposed to put that on silent.
I know, but I'm taking Twitter questions, so be that as it may. Let me ask another way, with permission from the audience. Do you support Roe versus Wade, or do you believe it should be overturned? So upheld or overturned? Okay, is that fair? Good. We're going to start with Mr. Ostrander. Upheld or overturned?
Upheld.
Roe v. Wade. Uphold.
Uphold.
Ms. Schneider.
Uphold.
This is a moral question that philosophers need to debate, not candidates with sound bites.
We'd like to get an answer because...
I know you'd like to. I'd like to have you listen to me about what St. Thomas Aquinas has said to say about this. And St. Augustine, it's a deep question.
It we is need to a raise deep question, bar. But we do have a Supreme Court.
I'd love you won't to speak be a member, to the Supreme Court.
Although you won't be a member of the Senate, you will have a say in terms of federal policy. So would you, let's say for argument's sake... Would you support or oppose a candidate that...
This is a divisive question, and putting our politics in yes or no questions is exactly the problem. That's my answer.
Okay, sir. Mr. Ashajian.
I lean towards pro-life, but there are conditions such as incest, mother's life in danger, or rape that woman needs to make that decision for herself. Hopefully she'll be surrounded with her physician and family members to support her. It is the law of the land, I understand that. But a question like that, when it comes to us, it's not the yes or no answer because...
Okay, is that a yes or no?
Uphold or overturned?
You need to bring in discussion everything else that's part of it, such as reaching out, educating them about other choices such as adoption and so forth, so on.
Okay. Do you want to respond as uphold or overturn, or there's your answer? Mr. Ashajian?
That's my answer, sir. That's my
Mr.
final.
Mr. Carbajal?
Uphold.
Mr. Fareed?
This has been ruled by the Supreme Court, and then you also have the 10th Amendment with what each state has their own set of laws on the books as well.
Uphold or overturn?
That's my answer to the question.
Okay. Mr. Isaacson?
Uphold.
Mr. Kokanen?
Overturned.
Thank you. Mr. Lucas?
Uphold.